Welcome to the Art and Science of Complex Sales. You've joined us in the Coaching Quarter. This podcast is dedicated to elevating the sales profession. Our listeners range from first-time salespeople to seasoned sales leaders and driven CEOs. They all come to learn from the best in the business as we interview top sales transformation specialists, go-to-market leaders, revenue thought leaders, and more with only one question on our minds: how we get better together. This 12-episode quarter brought to you by Membrane.com will start to hone in on a key element in performance: sales coaching. Each of our guests speaks to this a bit differently and brings their own unique take, but all cover the topic, how to execute, and the exponential impact it makes. So let's start shining bright and get kicked off with today's guest. Today, we're unlocking some secrets of transformative sales success with Barbara Spector, CEO and founder of Smart Moves. Her trailblazing journey from educating on epilepsy to reshaping sales strategies is a masterclass in coupling grit with the art of problem solving. She dives into the realm of high-performance sales teams, and we talk through how the right mindset, underpinned by effective coaching, can skyrocket your results. Barbara brings a refreshing view of sales as a puzzle to be solved, and her insight will help you on your path to becoming the puzzle master of your sales domain. So let's get started with Barbara Spector. All right, Barbara, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much. It's going to be just a great opportunity for us to talk about sales today.
I'm absolutely excited. And truth be told, we've been working together. You've been working with Membrane as a partner now for quite a bit. So I'm really excited to have you on and get some of these thoughts out there. First thing you got to do, though, this is all listeners know, Barbara Spector, define sales.
All right. I think of it as the art of solving puzzles. It's like being a puzzle master, where each client is maybe a unique puzzle to solve. It's about understanding their needs and finding the perfect piece, meaning the right solution that fits just right, like a puzzle. Said another way, it's about selling. It's not. I actually don't see it as selling. I see it about solving.
Solving.
So, I am a puppet master, a puzzle master. Sorry.
Puzzle master. Well, that's got to go to the name of your business then, Smart Moves. That seems
there
to, that ties directly to that thought. Are you a puzzler? Do you love sitting down and putting a big puzzle in front of you and putting the pieces together?
I do, but I enjoy it more from a sales perspective, where it's not an actual puzzle, but just being able to unravel the issues that people are having in sales organizations. And when I'm speaking to CEOs, I mean, seriously, it's just so much fun to put the pieces together of what their pain points are and finding the right solution to fix them.
See, I'm the exact same way. I can't sit down. It's funny. I can't sit down and I can't do a physical puzzle. I don't think that way. My wife thinks that way. She is phenomenal at it. She could sit down and do it like a 500 piece puzzle in a couple hours and just be incredibly happy. I can't. I love seeing the connections between people and process and thoughts and ideas and tying that to sales. That's brilliant. The puzzle master. So Barbara, the puzzle master, how did you get into this game? How did you get into the game?
Oh my goodness. I think I've been in sales ever since I've had a job, I've been in sales. So my very first position when I was a junior in college, I was hired by, or you're never going to believe this, the Epilepsy Society of Massachusetts to go out there and do stand-up presentations to inform people about the right way to deal with somebody if they were having a seizure. So wow. I wasn't selling something so much as I was influencing. And from there, after I had a couple of kids and went back into the workforce, I started selling my consulting services because I was schooled in how to become schooled in management consulting. And I found that the most exciting part of the work for me was the sales part. So I ended up, and I've never had a salary in my entire life. That's good news, bad news. The bad news is I didn't have a big 401k or any of that sort of thing because I didn't work for a corporation in that modality. But I had the grit, I guess you could call it, and the courage, which is super important in sales, to do it, to just get out there and do it and make it, I made my living by myself.
That's awesome.
awesome is an overly used word, so I should probably say something more descriptive. That's courageous. That's inspiring. That's, you know, how to, you've learned how to make your own lunch money is how I always used to say it to all the young salespeople I used to train. But how did you go about that? Like, what did you make a decision? It was just, this is what's in front of me. I'm going to go do it. Or like, how did you make a decision to get into the business?
Really, really good. Good question. So I don't know if you've ever heard about the book, What Color Is Your Parachute?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All My right. dad gave that to me.
Yeah. And it's probably in its 37th edition now.
Yeah.
It's still out there. So the beauty of that book, just to do this in shorthand, is it helps an individual to find out what their purpose, first of all, in being on the planet is, and then to filter that down almost like a funnel to what that end job might look like. So one of my degrees is in fine arts. And after I got divorced and had two kids and being the independent person that I am, I didn't want a lot of alimony and I needed to make it on my own. And I knew I couldn't do it by continuing my art. It just, I wasn't committed enough to that. So I read this book, and what fell out of the bottom of the funnel that I was just describing was, oh, I'm going to become a management consultant. But I wasn't a management consultant that was just solving, you know, executive problems. It was more like, for instance, I got for a long, long time, one of the roles that I played was a sales trainer. And so I did that for almost a decade. Another position was where I was selling the services of the management consulting firm. So it's just been a constant growth. And then in 1997, just before 1997, having worked for other companies and having seen, this was the biggie, having seen they had virtually no idea how to hire the right people, how to develop them and therefore keep them, I said to myself, that would be a great business. That would be a wonderful focus for a new venture. Because prior to that, I had all of the responsibility in these companies. I was executive VP of sales. I was executive VP, had all those titles, right? But I didn't have the authority since I wasn't the ultimate, you know, decision maker on major projects. And that's why I started my own business. I needed to have the authority and the responsibility. And so I started my own business. And of course, that was all sales. I borrowed 10 grand from my mother and it just took off. And I've been doing that ever since for the last, now it's 28 years.
That is so cool. So on 10 grand, you've made 28 years come true.
Uh-huh.
Congratulations, Barbara.
Thank
That's
you.
Really, that is a really cool, well, that's a really cool story. And I love, one of the most exciting things about this podcast is, and about our partners in general is being able to hear those types of stories and then dissect how it came about. So you're defining sales as you're the puzzle maker, you're defining it as the puzzling problem. So how did you go about putting together then this consultancy and going to market, right? So I got this consultancy. I have a dream. I have $10,000. I'm going to go to market. I need to sell my way into this. Like, how does that start? And what do you do?
It was pretty magical, actually. So I had the vision. I knew. So what my purpose in being on the planet is to help others really connect with each other and really understand each other. So I figured out that I would become this management consultant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the very first thing I did was instead of trying to find a job, I decided to create it. And so I opened up the San Francisco Chronicle, which was all we had back 27 years ago, to look for a position. And I knew what I wanted to find. And this ad popped up that they were looking for a sales trainer based out of a group down in LA. And I knew exactly how much money I wanted to earn. And it was exactly the price that what they were going to pay. I was the only candidate chosen out of 200 applicants, of which all of the finalists, 10 finalists were men. I was the only woman and never thought I was going to get the job because I figured some guy would get it. And I ended up getting the job and loved doing that work. Just loved it.
It led to that. So the contract position that led to this, and you just have that. That's really cool. So the puzzle pieces start to come together for you.
Absolutely. And from there, I hooked up with, I do a lot of work with sales assessments and actually pre-employment tools as well. And okay. Also what I call, we offer a sale, I call it a sales MRI. And it's a deep dive, just like going to the doctor when you're not feeling well. Mm-hmm. And he better ask you a whole bunch of questions, because if he just says, well, oh, let's just operate. and then you discover you started out with chest pains. And he operates, and only to discover all you had was indigestion. That happens a lot, not in medicine, but it happens a lot in sales, where people don't know how to ask the right questions or discover what the root cause of the problems are that are going on in a company. So what we do is we do a diagnostic on the organization first and foremost to find out where their strengths are, where their limitations are, where the gaps are, not just of the salespeople, but of the managers and the leaders as well. And then we can create an action plan. We can go on to sales training that's mapped to what we learned in the diagnostic. Real exciting stuff. It excites me to no end to do that work.
So do you use Objective Management Group, right?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. So many of our partners are connected to them, and it's such a valuable tool. Can we take that diagnostic, and then let's start to talk a little bit about how you map that to where you actually help train and coach people. Do you mind diving into that kind of, because that diagnostic is one thing, right? The ability to, okay, I'll be a consultant. I'll tell you what's wrong with everybody that you have. Great. Mm-hmm. But what do you do with that once you're done to really impact salespeople, their lives, their careers? Like,
great question.
How do you do that?
All right. So we use a blended learning approach. So I have a company out of Australia. Mm-hmm. It's called, I'll even tell you who they are. They're Adaptable Learning is their name. And they have put together a series of modules, online modules that are highly interactive, really engaging. So what we have are, we do two types of training, one for salespeople and another one for sales managers / leaders. And they go online and complete watching and thinking about and answering questions about this 30-minute module. And then the following week, I get all the salespeople together and do a coaching session with them. I do all the leaders in a separate coaching session so that we can kind of dovetail what we learned about the salespeople and help the sales managers to better coach them, which is the big issue. Because what I find is that coaching is so critical. It's not just about learn knowledge. I mean, that'll only take you so far. And even if you're out in the field and applying what you need to know or what you learned in these modules, just like a sports team, everybody improves when they have somebody to help them identify specific issues that can enhance or improve the outcomes that they need every step along the way in the sales process. So we're kind of playing the coach and modeling what we want the sales leaders to be doing when they're coaching their salespeople. So this is like a whole process that lasts for at least 6 months, sometimes a year. And it occurs twice a month. Two sessions a month and two coaching sessions a month for a period of 6 months. It's very intense. Because I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I keep going, because I have a question and I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Yeah,
what I think is just so silly is when companies put their salespeople into a weekend sales training. That's like in one ear and out the other. Because people don't change in a weekend. They don't even change usually in a month. So it takes time for them to literally become fluent in not only the tools and techniques they need to use and their competencies they need to improve upon, but that we've got to get down to the mindsets of all of these folks and have them redecide how they're going to be thinking about selling. Because mindset's everything. You know, I actually think there's a statistic that says that 80% of sales is mindset. You don't want to know what the other 20% is?
Yes.
Mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Well, tell me, because I was actually going to, that is where I was thinking of going with this question, which is the coaching aspect. So you're empowering that frontline manager to coach mindset and to inspire mindset and to change mindset. That is a tough thing to do. That's not a normal, I mean, a frontline manager is usually trained really well at helping customers change their mindset, right? And driving in, but truly inspiring and coaching a team and doing that. So how do you take that frontline management and then turn them to be the cream of the crop coaches, what is so necessary today?
Yeah. And we don't just coach on we don't help them to just coach on helping their salespeople get a healthier mindset. That's mm-hmm. just a piece of the equation, but it's more, if I can just digress a little bit and yeah. it will answer your question. It's more the fact that what I see is that the average sales manager not only doesn't know how to coach, but because they don't know how to coach, they avoid it. And so there is a methodology, and that's what we're actually teaching to these sales managers, is that a methodology that actually, instead of telling, here's a real short answer, it's way more than this, but instead of telling the salesperson what they should do, it's more about asking them what went wrong, if anything, by doing a post-call debriefing. Identify the lessons they learned of what didn't work and what they're going to be able to do differently. And not only that, how are they going to do it differently? So it's a questioning process rather than a telling process. And it enables the salesperson to actually become empowered to solve their own problem ultimately, so that they become more effective and ultimately can cut the umbilical cord at some point with the sales manager, so that they may not need coaching as frequently, because we start to get them to self-coach. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it makes perfect sense. How often do you have them? What that transition to the regular, maybe 3-4 times a week, to that weekly one-on-one? How often do you recommend coaching individuals when you're getting started in this with them? Like,
good question. So, I mean, I subscribe to the notion that you've got to have a 90-day onboarding plan to get going. Most mm-hmm. companies maybe do 2 weeks, and then they set these salespeople free. So within that 90-day period, they are beginning that coaching process, and I would say it should be every day. Yep. And the biggest problem is that the average sales manager spends, well, actually, there's a statistic that 15% of all sales managers spend less than 25% of their time coaching. And so it actually should be every single day at the beginning. It just might be a short meeting, maybe that they take all their salespeople once in the morning and do what we call the daily huddle, just kind of getting what happened today, any problems you're having, and then start working individually with each of the individuals by doing a deeper dive on what they need.
So every day, I think sales managers would say, where the heck do I have the time?
I know, that's what they will say.
Okay.
We're talking about that first period when they're hired. After that, weekly is fine.
Well, and one of the things that's really interesting that I've found that sales managers don't often get, right? At least initially in that first couple of years of being a manager or a director. I know immediately it didn't come to me, but is that the multiplying effect of coaching. I liken it to, compound interest, right?
Yes. Good analogy.
It's one of those things that investment really should pay lots of dividends, right? What I think I'm hearing you say, and I've heard others say as well, is that the focus on the near-term results often outweighs the long-term multiplying aspect. So the manager is always focused on, I need them effective. I need them effective now. I'm just going to freaking do it for them. Rather than having that 90-day, 180-day, three-quarter worth plan that says, you know what, if I build into this person, I know in a year that they are going to bring so much more in than they ever could if I didn't build into them.
Yep.
So that's a critical mindset shift, like that you have with managers. How do you attack that mindset shift with managers to make coaching an actual, almost a need to do rather than a, oh my God, I have to do it.
I'm smiling because I this is actually something that I use. I actually say to them, imagine that your bonus was tied to how effective you are at coaching and how frequently you do it. Would that change your mind about about coaching on a regular basis? And invariably, mm-hmm. the hands go up. Yeah, for sure. I said, good. I'm going to tell the CEO of your company that you need to. I'm kidding, of course.
Well, invariably it is, right? If we think about it, it's like, especially managers that are tied to revenue. Like,
exactly.
If they're tied to revenue, there is a direct correlation between the efficacy and the frequency of coaching and their bonus.
And I think sales managers have to see it, what's in it for them to do that, because mm-hmm. It really is tied to revenue. And clearly, if they have any kind of a year-end bonus or quarterly bonus, to the extent that they can drive more revenue and do it by more effectively coaching their salespeople who become higher achievers, it's to everybody's best interest. And they just have to carve out the time. They literally have to, just like we schedule meetings, we have to have a planned schedule for what and when to coach.
Yep. It's a tough shift. I'd have to say for people that are making it, it is a really tough shift when you're going from that high performer, and you're a high performer because you're in the room, you're talking to everybody, you're in all the deals, right? And you just know that you can close these deals if only you were the one doing it. Mm-hmm. How do you get them out of that mindset? Because it's often very true of... It's a very true statement that they, like many of these managers, actually can close a deal much more effectively than the person that they've hired to do it and are managing. Right?
Well, interesting question. I mean, the first thing that comes up for me is that we have to get them out of the mindset that only they can do it the right way. Mm-hmm. And they've got to be able to take the time to teach their salespeople how to do this and to also use a meaningful sales process where their salespeople don't skip over important steps in the sales process and therefore can't close deals. I mean, I've seen companies where their win rates are abysmal, right? And they think what they need to do is train their salespeople in closing techniques. And what we discover, going back to this diagnostic that we do, that mm-hmm. isn't the problem at all. The problem was the salespeople, A, aren't talking to the right decision maker. They aren't qualifying them properly. They aren't selling value of the product or the company. And therefore, they don't create any sense of urgency. So there's no way to close. So if we can get the managers to train on those items, it'll set them free from thinking they're the only ones that can do the closing. Because probably what the sales manager has is those skills that I just mentioned. They don't talk to somebody lower down on the totem pole. They're talking to the right person who is the economic buyer. They know how to sell value. They know how to sell consultatively. They know how to qualify, and they present at the right time instead of presenting being at the very beginning, which of course leads to absolutely no emotional need for this. For the prospect to buy anything. Yeah. So I hope that makes sense.
No, it makes a ton of sense. Cause I've been talking to a lot of people on this topic recently, and there's two starting points that I think, there's really two starting points that most experienced professionals in this area have. Number one is process, AKA method. Well, a methodology, right? What's a conversation methodology? And then within that, what are the steps in that process? And the other is the skills, mm-hmm. right? And some start directly from the skills, but I've always contended, like, if you don't have a stepwise process on how to do things, how are you ever going to understand where you need to put in the skills? Those are really the two things. So to hear you say that it takes that process, how do you go in and help the managers and help the teams develop that process by which they can then measure their results?
Excellent question. Well, as you know, we use membrane and we recommend membrane to our clients. And even if they're using some other platform, what we do is we spend a good half a day with the leaders in the company, first mm-hmm. and foremost, and have them literally build out. We give them a template to use as a starting point for their sales process, but then we have to have them, it has to be customized to what they specifically need. But if we can have a template of, it's kind of like best practices, what should the first phase be? What should the second phase be? Third and fourth. And I love Dave Curlin's model of the baseball diamond. So first, you've got to, before you can get to first base, you've got to, you know, get up, do some research, set up an appointment. Then we've got to get to second base, then third base, and fourth base. And so it's like these steps. It's what the process is along the way. And if we can help each salesperson, after the sales management team and I actually define what their customized sales process is going to be, and then the sales managers are able to track that in a tool like Membrane or any CRM. I love Membrane, by the way, because it helps to change behavior as opposed mm-hmm. to just being a data dump. They're way ahead of the game, because then the salesperson can always look backwards and go, oh, I forgot to make sure I was talking to the right person, or I forgot to quantify, not qualify, but quantify, because quantifying and qualifying are different. And it just helps them to stay on track. It's really critical to have a sales process.
Yeah, one of the things that I've found, there's a lot of, we call the podcast The Art and Science of Complex Sales for a reason, right? There's a lot of people that think sales is all that art. And there's even many top performers that have never quantified their process. They've never sat down and said, oh, geez, this is what I go through, because they don't think that way, but they generally go through that all the time. They do it through habits and discipline. But when we don't have that, when we don't have that process by which to identify where we are on a map, right? We don't know where we are on a map, right? So exactly. we're pulling out directions and we're trying to go get to the end, and we have no idea where we are, if we're at the beginning, the middle, or the end. And the skills to get from the beginning to the middle are much different than the skills to get from, you know, the middle to the end. Uh-huh. And so it's one of those things that I'm highly, highly passionate about. I love baseline. I love Dave and how he's worked that through. That's just amazing. And then tell me the difference after you go into a company and you say, I mean, and this is just on every, you go in and they're unstructured, they have no coaching, and you must just be seeing, you know, opportunity signs. But what are the types of impacts that you can make simply by doing things like, all right, we're going to put in a process, we're going to put in some coaching, we're going to teach your team how to do it, and we're going to do it consistently, regardless of all the pushback we're going to get from every single person on the team. what are some of the type of results that you can bring to the table?
Wow.
Sorry, long question. I talk too much.
No,
sometimes.
It's just a very important question. And there's so many things that in terms of the impact, positive impact that it has. I'll just speak in, you know, kind of 30,000 foot view here. First and foremost, it's going to increase top line revenue. And it usually does it by a minimum of 15%. So just imagine if a company... Well, I can tell you an interesting story with one of my clients. They were up in Canada, and they were manufacturing and selling custom windows and doors, and they sold them to big housing developments. And the first thing that they needed to do, what they got out of with the work that we did with them, is they were recognizing that the managers believed that the only thing that needed to, that they couldn't sell at the right price. They had to lower their price to sell. Mm-hmm. It was the bane of the sales executive's existence, because he had an idea that was just, again, a mindset. Mm-hmm. So we actually did a process with them around differentiation. And we said, let's create a laundry list of all the ways you're the same as everybody else, all your competitors, same as your competitors. And then we literally had everybody in the room folks that weren't in sales, people that were in operations and engineering and the factory and everybody, came up with this long list. And then we said, well, okay, that's great because that's what everybody's doing. So how are you going to differentiate yourself? And I can't remember who suggested the idea, but they said, well, you know, it's Canada and it's winter a lot of the time. And the generals for these construction sites really need all the windows and doors for all the houses at one time so that they can then plan on all of the other contractors who do the finish work inside the house. So they literally started doing that. They got everybody on board. They got manufacturing to really ramp up. They got all the salespeople to be able to now go out there and say, if you'd like your entire development to have all the windows and doors all at once, we can do that for you. Well, to make a long story short, they increased their top line revenue by 17% within the first year, just for that one division, which amounted to $20 million to that company.
Wow.
And their customers never asked them again, what's your best price? Because the value was there now. So that's the beauty of what happens when, one, you've got a good sales process. You've got good sales training in place. You've got managers who know how to coach their people and don't allow their salespeople to step over steps in the process, one of which is differentiation for sure. Right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good example. So money.
Yeah. Well, that's a fascinating story, because it pinpoints the specificity, I think, of some of the processes that you really need to have that you can't skip. Right. And it's just a question like that to me. That is one question that can't be, would you like to have these all delivered at once? Great. Nobody else can do that. And that becomes a question that shows value and takes price completely off the table. But if that isn't a part of a larger process that, you know, and it takes skill to ask that question. So
absolutely,
if you're not training on and measuring the number of times that you're doing that, you are missing the boat, right? Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic success story. I need to ask you, you came on today with a couple of free gifts in mind for people that listened. And you also, and I also need you to tell people how they get a hold of Barbara if they like what they hear. So let's start with that one first, and then let's go to the free gifts.
I'd love to be able to help anybody who's been listening to this call to help them really improve their entire sales force. We can really do a great job for them. So the best way to reach me is simply to go to VIPchatwithbarb.com. And that'll take you to additional information about who we are, how we can help, and a way to schedule a meeting with me.
VIPchatwithbarb.com. Are you also on LinkedIn?
Yep.
Can people find you there?
Absolutely. And just my name, Barbara Spector. And my company name is Smart Moves, all one word. So you should be easy enough to find me. And there's also a link to my website there where people can poke around and see all the other things that we do as well.
Well, and I know, so I'm going to bring these up too, because you have a couple of free gifts, the Mindset Guide, and that is at theguide.vip, right? Theguide.vip.
Yeah. So if anyone here, any listeners would like to know what there's a kind of a standard set of mindsets that salespeople have, not necessarily bad. They're only bad if they're weak, all right? But I list out the 9 most common mindsets that salespeople have. And if they're strong, they become an asset that enhances their selling capabilities. But if they're weak, they literally hinder the ability of them to use strong selling competencies. So that can be found at theguide.vip.
Theguide.vip. All right. We'll try and make sure that we get those in the show notes as well. And then you have a second one, which talks about what are some of the steps for transformation, right? And I'm going to get salesforcemastery.com.
Yep. Get salesforcemastery.com. So I use the acronyms, the word Salesforce, and I literally am taking each one of those letters and using it as the starting point and the starting word of each step in a way to do it, to transform a sales organization. It's really, really neat. And I built it so that a person could literally keep it on their desk to make sure, like a leader can keep it on their desk as a guide for, are we doing this? Are we doing that? Like that.
That's excellent. I would recommend everybody check that out and make sure that you do that. One thing I also want to bring up, if people are in Northern California, are they able to get a round of golf with you ever?
Oh, absolutely. Whenever you like.
Barbara and I were talking before the show, and she's an avid golfer. And I was telling her about Columbus, Ohio, and all the courses here. But yeah, up your way. If you get up to Northern California, make sure, and you have sales issues and you want to talk, make sure you get her out for a round of golf.
And the best thing is, we don't have any snow.
We do. So, we do. It's freezing
right now. Long.
Yeah. Oh, it is freezing right now. It is so cold. But all right. Well, hey, this has been an honor and a blessing. It's just absolutely wonderful to have you on the show. Any last thoughts you want to give to the audience before we sign off?
Yeah, I would say you can't fix what you can't measure. So it's so important to not do guesswork when it comes to the issues that are going on. If you're seeing gaps in the selling skills of your people or your revenue stream or your pipeline is too weak or your win rates are too low, you've got to find out what the root cause of those problems are, not look at the symptoms. And that's a lot of the work that we do, and we can really help people with that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for being on the show with us, Barbara. It's been, like I said, an honor and a pleasure. And with that, we're going to sign off, everybody, from the Art and Science of Complex Sales. Keep shining bright out there and have an amazing day. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Art and Science of Complex Sales. Please take a moment, like, subscribe, share this podcast on all your favorite platforms, and let's get the word out. This podcast is proud to be brought to you by Membrane.com. We are the world's top B2B sales platform. And in the world of B2B sales, with everything from prospecting to business acquisition to managing complex growth, Membrane has the right size technology for your sales team. Our latest innovation, the Coaching Cockpit, empowers your leaders, managers, and team with the information and tools they need to take their skills to the next level and to take advantage of the exponential power of effective sales coaching. With our technology and the top team of sales partners around the world, Membrane is helping to achieve our driving vision. This is, quite simply, elevating the sales profession. To learn more, find us at www.membrane.com. That is membrain.com, or contact us via email at sales@membrane.com. Keep shining bright and have a wonderful day.